Welcome to the Eat Right Nutrition Podcast, where we partner with experts in the health, wellness, and nutrition field to deliver you an excellent variety of content based on real science, real facts, and real food. I'm your host, Aron.
And I'm Nicole.
And today we're talking about five reasons you're not losing weight. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 132 of the Eat Right Nutrition Podcast. Today, we are talking about five reasons you're not losing weight. I think oftentimes, Nicole.
Yes.
You know, this is something that I hear from clients often. Daron, I've tried everything. I've been doing everything and I'm not losing weight. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if you're not losing weight, chances are you really haven't tried anything.
Or everything.
You really haven't tried everything. That's what I meant to say. So I want to go over today some reasons why you may not be losing weight, even though you think you've tried everything. And Nicole, number one here is, I think one of the most important things that you need to do in your journey. And I know that some people may argue in like the intuitive eating camp, like you shouldn't track and you shouldn't have to be so diligent with it. You should be able to have food freedom. I don't agree with that. And I think that logging in a food journal, so number one is you're not tracking. And I think that logging in a food journal does a lot for you. I think that it allows you to become massively aware of what you're doing. It allows you to become massively aware of your eating habits, what your triggers are for certain foods, because you can not only just keep a food journal, but you can keep multiple journals along with that. And one of those is a habit journal or a trigger journal in terms of what is causing you to do the things that you're doing. For example, did you get a bad night's sleep and that caused you to crave certain foods? Are you stressed out and that causes you to crave certain foods? And what that does for you is it allows you to address the underlying cause of your eating habits and really understand, okay, I have to manage not just my nutrition, but I have to manage my stress, because my stress is what is causing the snowball effect of I get stressed out, I crave foods, I eat foods, I feel better, then I feel worse about myself because of the foods that I've eaten, and then I'm stressed out because of that, and then I eat more foods that aren't in line with what my goals are, and so on and so forth, and you just continue to spiral down this path. And I think that keeping a journal from a habit standpoint is very important for that.
Absolutely. I think I want to go back. I have two things to say about that. One, what you just described is what I call tracking trends. It's not that you have to track necessarily every morsel of food that you eat in a restricted, rigid, not food freedom type of way. It's quite the opposite. You want to allow yourself to journal exactly what you're eating, exactly the way you're eating it, even if it's quote unquote not optimal for your goal, so that you can track the trends based on just what you're saying around why those things are happening. And that's where one, awareness comes in, and two, awareness as to why those things are happening when you track. The last thing you want to do is be so restrictive that it backfires in the other way, where you end up having disordered eating patterns, or it stresses you out, or it makes you crazy about tracking food. The goal is to navigate the middle and find a middle ground as to how you can track in a way that is the most optimal to reach the goal without any stress or any more stress than you're probably already getting in life, right? So if you can find the sweet spot between the two, that to me is the goal. So tracking can be done in so many ways. And I think this is where people tend to use tracking not only incorrectly, but they also use it as a way to make themselves feel worse about themselves instead of using it to feel better about yourself and understanding why you're doing what you're doing and how you're eating and what you need to change to like plug and play to make things better. And I think that really does come down to if you have someone that's supportive, whether that be a coach or, you know, a buddy system that you're doing with a group of friends and you're helping support each other figure out what's going on, and you have a coach that's helping you through all of those difficult moments where you're like, okay, I didn't track at all because I'm afraid to put the food in and see what I'm doing, or I put the food in and I did go over my calories. I didn't think I was. I thought I was hitting my protein and I clearly am not. And we see this over and over again. Many people think that they are doing everything quote unquote right, but it's not about being right, which is, I think, the other big mistake in that sentence. I can't lose weight because I'm doing everything right. It's not about being right or wrong. It's about finding what's the most optimal for you as the individual and then pivoting and making changes so that it can blend together to be the best experience and get you the goal that you're looking for.
Right. And I think to your point, Nicole, I think oftentimes people say, okay, well, I'm going to log in a food journal. So I have to just put in clean food. So I have to only eat that quote unquote clean food. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, it's like you and I follow a more of a flexible dieting approach where we say there's one thing that I say all the time. People can just quote me saying this at this point, eat the foods you enjoy within the parameters that you set for yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. So if I'm your coach and I'm setting parameters for you and you want to have a cookie, cool. Does that fit in with your day in the caloric parameters that you set for yourself? And if it does, then it's perfectly fine. I think where the food journal comes in with this is awareness of portion sizes so that you know how much you're eating, and also mm-hmm. awareness of how calorically dense things are so that you can figure out how to navigate the foods within your food journal and make the foods that you enjoy fit into that structure that you're trying to create. I have, even from a healthy food standpoint, I'll give you an example of a client that I'm working with that started with me eating 12-ounce portions of protein. And I love encouraging people to eat protein, but 12-ounce portions of protein 3 or 4 times a day, to me, is just insane, right? So I'm practicing with him, okay, well, this is your protein goal, and this is how you need to shrink your portions, and you need to eat about 5 or 6 ounces per meal. You need to eat half of what you're eating, even in protein, because what happens is you're going over on calories on foods that you generally think are healthy, but you're not aware of how those calories are adding up. So this is really where a food journal really helps people to create awareness of their portion sizes. And I would even go as far as to say a food scale in conjunction with a food journal is really going to help you in that area.
Yeah, absolutely agree about the food scale, because that's the other piece too that you kind of just touched upon is making things fit. I always say to clients, we're journaling so that the lifestyle that you're currently living, we're going to check up on, not the other way around. We're not going to journal so that you get to beat yourself up and confirm that you're not doing anything quote unquote right. So you don't, fit the food into the journal and then not be able to live that way. It's the other way around. You live that way and put it in the journal to check up on and see, like you said, is 12 ounces better than 6 ounces of protein or 6 ounces better than 12? That's a small change that can really make a big difference in achieving your goal. And it's still healthy food. It's right. It's still good stuff. He might not be doing anything necessarily wrong, just the portion. That's such a small change and so easy to tweak. I also think people, they're so afraid to put quote unquote bad foods like cookies and chips and stuff in. And I'll give you an example. What are those popcorners? Yeah. So a bag of those is, well, there's like maybe 120 calories in a serving. And I think a serving is maybe like 12 to 14 or 16 chips or something like that. And so 120, and there's 7 servings in the bag, something ridiculous like that. An enormous amount of calories for this tiny little air-filled pop chip things. And my client can eat an entire bag of those in one sitting when she's at home watching TV at night. And so she didn't even realize that one whole bag was a lot of calories and a lot of carbohydrates. So I'm like, okay, so just count out, you don't have to get obsessive about counting out 16 chips unless you want to, but if you really want to track the serving size, give yourself 16 chips. It's 120 calories. Eat them nice and slow. Enjoy every bite, every crunch. Have it with a sandwich and fit it into your tracker for the day. And then there's no guilt or shame. You can enjoy the things that you love, but you do have to be aware of how much you're eating.
Yeah. And I think just allowing yourself to have them and not saying, oh, well, I can't eat these because it was too many calories.
Yeah.
I think often, well, here's the thing is oftentimes when we think that we can't have a food, we end up eating more of it.
Yeah.
And if we restrict that food, this is why we take that flexible dieting approach. It's more realistic. And it's also way more realistic in social settings to be able to figure out and navigate and still stay on track. Like we always say, is eating out and staying on track. It helps you to kind of navigate the social situations too.
Yeah.
The other thing that I'll say in terms of tracking is if you're not tracking your progress on your workout, so on the workout end,
yes,
some people keep a workout journal. And for us, Nicole, we do it through the Eat Right Nutrition app where our clients will just go in, they'll plug in, they'll have their program all ready for them, and they'll plug in, how many reps did I do? What weight did I do? And then the following week, let's say that was a bench press, they go back and they hit the bench press again, and it tells them where they left off. And I think it's very important to track your progress in terms of your workouts so that you can see if you're truly following a progressive overload program and you're progressing either in reps, the number of sets that you're doing, the weight that you're doing, the time intervals in between each set, right? Like your rest intervals, right? All of those things are different variables that you can change. But if you don't know where you are, I can't tell you how many times clients have been like, I don't remember the weight. Like, I'm like, how do you not remember the weight that like your max weight on an exercise? I don't understand that, because you're always, you want to, one of the problems is with people is that they just want to do workouts, but they don't want to do workouts to get more physically fit. And this is one of the things that you really need to focus on when you're tracking your progress is, am I getting more physically fit? Because if I get more physically fit, I'm capable to train with more intensity and therefore get better outcomes and better results and become more metabolically active, which is another one that we're going to talk about in a moment. So tracking, let's say, workout frequency, how frequently you're working out, tracking your performance metrics, such as your strength, your stamina, a certain time that you did on a run or a bike. All of those things are important to know, even if it's a mental note, but you have to remember what you did before so that you know how you're progressing.
Yeah, I will also say something about rest periods, because I know we program rests into our workouts with our clients. And I always say, are you timing them, or are you guesstimating that you rested 30 seconds or 3 minutes? And trust me, unless they're actually really timing the rest period, they walk away, they're talking to someone at the bench press, or they go run to the bathroom or they get water. I'm like, you didn't time that. Was it exactly 30 seconds or 3 minutes, whatever the rest period is? And they're like, well, I'm like, no. Let's reel that in. Not only do I want you to really time it, then I want you to really track what it was because that changes the intensity.
It's interesting that you said that, because I had a client that one day told me, Daron, this new workout, that this program that you wrote me, I just don't feel like it's hard enough.
Yes, exactly.
And I told him, listen, I know you and I know your personality. Mm-hmm. I know that you're in the gym talking to every girl. Mm-hmm. And what I need you to do is I need you to stick to the amount of time that you have allotted to rest.
Yeah.
And you need to time your rest intervals. Then come back to me and tell me that your workout is too easy.
Absolutely.
And he came back to me and he said, man, that workout was tough.
Yeah.
So it's exactly to your point, is that people are just too distracted doing other things. And it's the same thing with, like, you don't have a perception initially of food quantities before you track. You don't have really a perception of, well, how much is 90 seconds? What is, you know what I'm saying? So that's something that really needs to be tracked too.
Yeah. Agree.
And then number two, Nicole, of the five reasons that you're not losing weight is you're just not consistent. You can't do things for a day or even just a week and expect results. You have to put in the work and the time every single day. You have to be consistent with prepping your meals and eating out less frequently. You have to be consistent with your cardio. You have to be consistent with your workouts. You have to be consistent with your protein intake, your calories. All of these things have to happen on a consistent basis, day in and day out, over longer periods of time, and then they compound into these results that you're looking for.
Yes, that's why we call it a lifestyle and not a short-term fix, because this is something that you should become natural with doing from now on. And the consistency, it's thrown around. I mean, it's everywhere. We've probably talked about it on probably every podcast in some capacity, and you hear it now everywhere. all over the fitness industry. I mean, it's always been talked about, but it's much more intense now because I think so many people, we're still seeing a lot of quick fix things coming up or sticking around. And consistency is always the thing that we continue to come back to. Discipline, consistency, adherence, all these words that keep floating around. But if it's not something that's embedded into you as the next this person that is becoming this goal, or this person that has lost weight and is keeping it off, consistency is a big piece.
Right. So the key word that you use there, Nicole, that I want to bring up is it's embedded. You talk about it being embedded. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about you doing something consistently, you're doing repetitions over and over and over and over again. That's being embedded, physically actually being embedded into your brain as a habit. And this is what we're talking about, because consistency breeds habits. Because that the definition of a habit is you literally do something over and over and over again until it actually becomes a habit, and then it's second nature. You don't have to think about it, you just do it. And the other thing that you brought up is becoming the person that hits that goal, which mm-hmm. is something really valuable that we always talk about, right? You have to become the person that does this on a consistent basis, and you have to accept that you have to become that person, right? It's not enough just to do it one day and say, okay, well, I did it today. You have to think, and this kind of brings me back to Eat Right Nutrition and when we started Eat Right Nutrition, because mm-hmm. what I saw ahead of me when I said, I'm going to embark on this journey, I'm going to have to become the person that just reads research all the time. I'm going to have to be like, and that part of it was kind of agonizing because I didn't know how I was going to do it because I hadn't developed the habits, mm-hmm. but I did it with intent because I thought to myself, I want to do this and I want to build this thing and I want it to be for life. And in order to do that, I need to accept that this is the path that I need to take. And mm-hmm. I need to just do these things over and over again. Now it's easier. I'm not going to say it's always easy. Just like in bodybuilding, when I was competing, I didn't always want to work out, but I still did it consistently. So I think it gets easier over time to do it consistently, but you also have to be realistic and think you're not always going to want to do it consistently. And the days that you don't want to do it are the most important days to create habits. Those are the most important days to actually do it, because if you could do it at your worst, then it makes it that much easier to do it on any other day.
Yeah. I also think the pain points, like we hear people talk about this. I hear people talk about this all the time. And I have experienced it myself. I took a class a couple of years ago. I'll never forget the class. I think I'll tell you this. It was a boxing class and I'm a ballerina, so this is not necessarily my sweet spot. But I went to take the class and I was so embarrassed because I couldn't follow the rhythms of the stuff that he was calling out. And I felt so like defeated because I hadn't taken a class. I had been lifting a lot, but I haven't done a lot of cardio. And I really felt like a pile of shit, to be honest with you. So on my way home, I literally cried the whole way home. I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh my God, I have let myself go. I have no cardio capacity. Like, that was awful. People must have been looking at me. Of course I did. Then here's my point to that is I cried all the way home, but I was like, well, if I'm crying, then there's got to be a reason why. That's the reason why I have to go back. So I before I even left and started crying, I bought a 6-month membership because it was close to the end of the year. I was like, I have till the end of this year, till the new year to like get myself embedded into doing this. And I did it. And every time I went, I learned, you know, you get better at the combinations. You feel more comfortable. I made some friends in the class because I'm also a big dork and I'm very quiet and I'm, you know, a little awkward at the beginning. And now I'm friends with half of the people that I was taking class with. And I go all the time. And I look back at that and I think, boy, I was such a baby when I came out of there crying. But it's hard. My point to that is that you talk about starting a business. I'm talking about just taking a class. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be something so simple or something that's a big dream, but you're always going to suck at it at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Nicole, the other piece is being consistent with your nutrition. And I want to take it from a standpoint of being in a consistent calorie deficit, because oftentimes what we find is that people will diligently track during the week, and then on the weekend, they'll drink alcohol. Wow, I'm not putting that in my journal. Or they'll, you know, eat out and they won't account for it. And again, going back to not realizing how quickly calories can add up and how calorically dense, like I think people way underestimate how calorically dense a food can be. Like when you look at a cookie that is like 600 calories, you're like, that's somebody's meal right there. That's an entire meal. And that's not going to fill you up. So I think oftentimes what happens is that people aren't consistent with their deficit and they negate their deficit on the weekends, or it just could take one day of the week where you eat 3,500 calories and there goes your net deficit. Now you're in maintenance calories, or now maybe you're even gaining weight. Right. So you have to be, you have to stick to your plan and you have to be consistent with the execution of your deficit. And I promise you, you are going to get results as long as you are expending more energy than you are taking in. And don't just think about it as daily deficits. You have to think about it as weekly and monthly and yearly deficits. And are you overall going to stay in a deficit, or are you going to take yourself out of it?
Mm-hmm. Agree.
All right. So number three on our list of five reasons you're not losing weight is you're not focusing on recovery. And this is where we get into the majority of Americans don't sleep enough. And I think it's estimated something like 40% of Americans aren't getting enough sleep. That's a lot of people. 60% of people are getting adequate sleep and 40% aren't. So I think one of the things that we want to look at from a sleep standpoint or from a recovery standpoint is, A, are you getting enough sleep? But we want to look at how sleep affects us, right? So there are two things that happen from a sleep standpoint that I find with people. Number one is we know that studies show that sleep deprivation can alter your glucose metabolism. It can alter hormones involved in regulating metabolism, like your thyroid hormone. It can also decrease your leptin levels and increase your ghrelin levels, causing you to be hungry, because leptin and ghrelin are two hormones that control your hunger and satiety, right? Ghrelin is something that makes you hungry, and leptin is something that makes you feel full. So if your fat cells aren't producing adequate leptin, then you're not going to feel satiated. And if you're, you know, increasing your ghrelin levels, then ghrelin's going to make you hungrier. This is part of the reason why this, and just, I think, feeling tired in general, people generally tend to, when they're not getting adequate sleep, they make poor decisions. But then on the flip side of that, also from a metabolic standpoint, you're not building muscle and you're not recovering from your workouts, right? So if you're not getting adequate sleep and you're sore for more than 72 hours from a workout, then you know that you're not recovering properly. And the first thing that you should be looking at is, okay, well, am I getting adequate sleep or am I overtraining? Right. So those are two areas that you'll want to focus on in terms of, okay, well, how sore am I? And I think Nicole, people get the misconception that soreness means that they got a good workout. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be sore from a workout for that workout to be effective. Oftentimes you're either sore for a long time because you have delayed onset muscle soreness, DOMS, and you're not recovering adequately, or if you just started a new workout program and that's a new stimulus, mm-hmm. then you're going to be sore. Soreness is just metabolic. I don't know if I'll call it metabolic waste product or just it's a byproduct of metabolism actually happening. And your body, when you do a new workout that you haven't done before, it's a bigger stress on the system. And then your body ends up being more sore, but you shouldn't be sore for more than that 72-hour period.
Mm-hmm. I think also if you're not eating enough, that is also why some of my clients have a hard time sleeping, which then makes them not be able to get their workout in, which then perpetuates poor recovery, like kind of like a cycle.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the sleep thing too, if you're not working out frequently enough, you're probably not getting enough sleep because you're not physically mm-hmm. active enough throughout the day, and being physically mm-hmm. active throughout the day helps you fall asleep better. Also, again, going back to consistency, if you're not working out on a consistent basis and every workout is a new stimulus to you and you feel super sore every time you do a workout and you're not recovering from it because you're not adapted to those workouts and that frequency of working out, then that is going to affect you as well. So just a couple of things to keep in mind when it comes to that. And then like we talk about overtraining too. If you're overtraining, you're not going to be able to adequately recover from those workouts. And overtraining comes from two things. Nicole, to your point, overtraining can come from under eating and just creating too much of a stimulus and not supporting it with the right nourishment in order to support that stimulus that you're creating. Or overtraining can just be you're doing too much high intensity work too frequently, and that's too taxing on your central nervous system, and it's just too much of a stressor on the body and you can't recover from it.
Yeah.
Number four on our list is you're not metabolically efficient. And I think that this is something for the newcomers to the gym who are listening to this podcast. This whole process takes time. And I think it's very important to realize that we need to kind of preemptively make these metabolic adaptations and focus on that in order to then get results. I think that oftentimes people get results very quickly when they first start. But I also do think that people's expectations is that they're going to get more, but they're not metabolically efficient enough. And what I mean by that is if you take somebody who is really fit and has been working out for 5+ years, really intensely on a consistent basis, those people are able to get away with eating more calories and losing weight, right? Our goal isn't to give everybody 1200 calories a day. Our goal is to put people in an appropriate deficit. But as people progress and they build more muscle over long periods of time, that calorie deficit becomes more and more calories, right? And this is one of the, I guess, the issues that we face as coaches in terms of determining what somebody's calorie surplus, maintenance, or deficit is going to be because of all of the variables in terms of their metabolism and how their metabolism functions. If you're more fit, if I just plug it into an equation, like if I use a Mifflin equation or Catch-McArdle or something of that sort, it's going to spit out a number based on the average population. But if you're somebody that's fitter, you're generally going to eat a significant amount more calories than that. And one of the reasons for that is when you build muscle over long periods of time, for every pound of muscle that you build, it's estimated that you burn an additional 6 calories. Now, that may not seem like a lot, but we've talked about this before. That gets compounded over a period of time, and you burn, let's say you put on 10 pounds of muscle, that's 60 calories per day extra that you're burning. If you put on 20 pounds of muscle over a period of time, that's an extra 120, right? So you're burning more calories just by building more lean tissue, and then your deficit ends up being higher. And the other piece to that is, if you're doing a ton of cardiovascular activity, that increases mitochondrial density. So if you have more mitochondria, if you remember from middle school or high school or whenever you learned it, everybody knows that the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. What that means is that this is where energy is processed. This is where the Krebs cycle, this is where the electron transport chain occurs, right? Things that produce energy for you. The more mitochondria you have, you know, and it's interesting too, Nicole, is that, you know, we look at people that live in cold populations. Mm-hmm. And we look at brown adiposity, like brown adipose tissue.
Yeah,
tissue. Right? So brown adipose tissue is actually the color brown because it is mitochondrially dense. So there's something about being in cold environments that makes this fat tissue more metabolically advantageous. What are you laughing at?
I'm thinking, okay, so the snow days are a good thing for us in Boston.
Yeah, I mean,
freezing cold.
So I don't know what level...
I'm just kidding.
It needs to be at. But what we find is the more mitochondria you have, the more metabolically active you are. Now, I'm not telling everybody to go jump in the snow and freeze to death. But what I am telling people is that when you exercise, you're also creating more mitochondrial density in your muscle cells. So I think it's really important to realize that the cumulative effect of these metabolic changes over a long period of time is what is going to ultimately get you to where you need to go.
Yes. And the opposite is true. If you are someone that hasn't been exercising and you haven't been tracking food or you haven't been paying attention, the compounding in effect of the way your body functions is what we're trying to get you out of. Like, especially if you're new, right? So you've had 3 years off, you went and got a degree, or you became a new mom, and or you just got a new job and you slacked off and you haven't been exercising and now you're re-entering. These are all the things that underlining kind of in the background are going to be you're building on to become more efficient and get back on, quote unquote, back on track and achieve your goal. So the more you stay on track, the less, everybody says it, the more you stay on track, the less work you have to do when you enter back in, right? So if it's a short break, no problem. If it's a, you know, 4 or 5 years, you're going to have, like you said earlier, set your expectations correct. This is going to be something you have to re-enter and rebuild on. And not that it completely goes away, but it's going to take some time to rebuild and you have to be patient.
Yeah. And to that point also, like we talked about, or I talk about all the time, is it's easier for somebody to stay in shape when they're in shape. It's harder for somebody to get in shape. And one of those reasons is because of those metabolic adaptations that we're talking about.
Yes.
And so, Nicole, the last one, last but not least, finally, we're going to end with, you're not working hard enough. You're not being honest.
You're going to hurt a lot of people by saying that out loud. Take a minute. Fine. Take a breath. Let them catch it.
You're not being honest with yourself about how hard you're actually working. I see people all the time in the gym doing the same shit, lifting the same weights, mm-hmm. not progressing in their program. They're not getting stronger. And they're like, I work out every day and I am not getting results. And it's because you're not pushing yourself. If you're not working hard enough in the gym, if you're not progressing, and if you're not pushing yourself, you won't get anywhere. And I'll tell you why. Metabolic adaptations happen as a result of stress. If you're not stressing the system, it has no reason to change. Think about it from a survival standpoint. If you're doing a bench press and you're struggling really hard, or you even fail at that bench press, which failure is okay, especially in this context, it's actually necessary. If you are not at or coming close to failure on any given set that you're doing, your body has no reason to change because it can already handle that stress and it can survive through that stress. It can do it on a continuous basis. You've already done it before. You've been doing it over and over again. You need to give your body a challenge so that your body thinks, oh shit, if I can't push this barbell up over my chest, then I may die the next time this happens. So I need to, it's the truth. I need to build and be more resilient and be able to get stronger in order to do this so that I can survive. That is how your body has evolved. It needs to be put under a pretty significant amount of stress in order to acclimate and change.
Yes, agree. Just make sure you use a spotter if you're pushing that hard.
Use a spotter, and you should actually need to use a spotter if you're working out hard enough. You have to ask yourself this. How many reps did I have in the tank? Did I get close to failure? Or did I not? Mm-hmm. If you were 2, maybe 3 reps away from failure, like I could not do more than 3 reps, you're in a good spot.
Yeah.
If it's any more than that, you're not working hard enough and you need to increase that weight, or you need to increase the volume in terms of the reps that you're doing. But you need to make sure that you're working hard. You also have to look at your cardio. Is my time decreasing on something? Is my heart rate decreasing when I'm doing cardio, right? Like, is my body adapting? Is it adapting to the work that I'm doing on a consistent basis day in and day out? I see so many people in the gym, just like we talked about before, talking and bullshitting in between sets, and they're not really working hard. They're not pushing themselves. So I advise you to just be realistic about yourself in terms of how hard you're actually working. And I look at this from like a life standpoint too, Nicole, is that a lot of people just aren't working hard in a lot of areas. And I get it. I understand it. Working hard is hard. But you know what else is even harder than working hard is not getting the outcomes that you desire. To me, that's much tougher than the hard shit that you have to put yourself through in order to get where you're going. That to me is in all areas of your life, like you really need to work hard, be a hard worker to achieve anything that you want that's worth achieving.
Yeah. Well, this is why I will always stand behind one-on-one personal training, because for a lot of my one-on-one clients, there's two parts to that you are talking about. One is I'm there to push them when they think they can't do it. Two, I'm there to help them through deciding what is actually too much and not enough. They have someone there for support to go, no, you can do the last two of these, but wait, maybe we should, no, take it off, take some rest, or is timing the rest periods, or is timing their one mile run and pushing them to go a little faster. Sometimes you need that person there to help you through it because you are so stressed and thinking about other things, and maybe you're not totally in the workout. And this is the 1 hour that I get to take control, and the person can give up the control and just focus on getting a good workout, take their brain away from having to think about all of the things that we're talking about to some extent. And then the last piece is people don't know how to gauge, like we talked about them not knowing how to gauge portion of something or what their awareness to what they're eating. It's the same thing with exercise. If you're brand new and you're unaware of how much you can actually push or not push or what's too much, you having a trainer there with you to walk you through all of these and be consistent and show up and hold you accountable. I mean, obviously I'm biased because I'm a trainer, but I think it's the way to go, especially if you're new.
Yeah. And to the, one of the points that you brought up is that if they're not really kind of present in their mind, yes, in the workout, yes, it's very important for you to be there, right? Like at this point, when I go work out, my phone is on silent. Mm-hmm. So I'm not getting any calls or text messages for 1 hour of the day. And yes, that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's what should be done, because you need to focus on what you're doing in order to be able to push yourself hard enough.
Yeah. I say this to clients all the time. This is especially if they see me, whether it be an hour, once a week or twice a week, the time that you are with me, you have my undivided attention. My job is to be here for you. And you need to now get rid of your phone, get off Instagram or email or whatever you're checking, put the phone to the side, and let's focus on feeling your body, getting sweaty, out of breath. People do work hard. They work hard in other things. And maybe this work hard time, they need a little bit of refocus and help to keep them in the zone. So,
man, you know, some people work hard, other people don't.
Oh, come on. You got to give people credit. I think there are people out there working their asses off and working really hard. And even the people that are working hard may need a trainer so that they don't overtrain. Like, it can go either way. It's all about balance.
Some people also work hard and they put their energy into the wrong places. And that a lot of times we see that with fitness too, and with nutrition, is that you're just not prioritizing the right things and working hard in the areas that you really should work hard on. And instead you're too busy being stressed out about the things that really don't matter.
Yeah.
So with that being said, in terms of working hard, you also need to work hard in all the areas that we talked about. You need to work hard in terms of making sure that you're going to bed at the proper time, and making sure that you're recovering, and making sure that you're taking the time to become more metabolically efficient. You need to work hard in terms of putting in the time and effort to tracking your food, learning about your body, focusing diligently, and staying on track with all of the things that we just talked about. They all take work. They all take time, consistency, and patience. And with that being said, if you enjoyed this episode, click subscribe, give us 5 stars, write a review, share this with a friend, and you'll hear us next week.